"Then you shall take me aboard," Bligh said, scowling, when Riley had also made his more polite refusal. "I will return with you to England, and there present the case directly. So far, I trust, you cannot deny me," he asserted with some truth. Such a refusal would have been most dangerous politically to Riley, whose position was less assured than Granby's, and unprotected by any significant interest. But Bligh's real intention, certainly, was to return not to England, but to the colony, in their company, and under Riley's protection, with the power meanwhile of continuing his attempts at persuasion, however long they should remain there in port. It was not to be supposed that Lawrence could put himself at Bligh's service, in that gentleman's present mood, without at once being ordered to restore him to his office, and to turn temeraire upon the rebels. If such a course might have served Lawrence's self-interest, it was wholly inimical to his every feeling. He had allowed himself and Temeraire to be so used once in the war, by Wellington against the French invaders, in Britain's greatest extremity. It had still left the blackest taste in his mouth, and he would never again so submit. Yet, equally, if Lawrence put himself at the service of the New South Wales Corps, he became nearly an assistant to mutiny. It required no great political gifts to know this was of all accusations the one which he could least afford to sustain, and the one which would be most readily believed and seized upon by his enemies and Temeraire's, to deny them any hope of return.
"I do not see any difficulty. There is no reason why you should surrender to anyone," Temeraire said obstinately, when Lawrence had in some anxiety raised the subject with him aboard ship as they made the trip from Van Diemen's Land to Sydney, the last leg of their long voyage, which Lawrence formerly would have advanced with pleasure, and now with far more pleasure would have delayed.
"You have done perfectly well all this time at sea, and we will do perfectly well now, even if a few tiresome people have been rude."
"Legally, I have been in Captain Riley's charge, and may remain so a little longer," Lawrence answered, "but that cannot answer for very long. Ordinarily he ought to discharge me to the authorities with the rest of the prisoners."
"Why ever must he? Riley is a sensible person," Temeraire said, "and if you must surrender to someone, he is certainly better than Bligh. I cannot like anyone who will insist on interrupting us at our reading 4 times, only because he wishes to tell you yet again how wicked the colonists are and how much rum they drink. Why that should be of any interest to anyone, I am sure I do not know."
"My dear, Riley will not long remain with us," Lawrence said. "A dragon transport cannot simply sit in harbour. This is the first time one has been spared to this part of the world, and that only to deliver us. When she has been scraped and the mizzen topmast replaced from that blow we had near the Cape, they will go. I am sure Riley expects fresh orders very nearly from the next ship into harbour behind us."
"Oh," Temeraire said, a little downcast, "and we will stay, I suppose?"
"Yes," Lawrence said quietly. "I am sorry."
And without transport, Temeraire would be quite truly a prisoner of their new situation. There were few ships, and none of merchant class, which could carry a dragon of Temeraire's size, and no flying route which could safely see him to any other part of the world. A light courier built for endurance perhaps might manage it in extremis, with a well-informed navigator, clear weather and luck, setting down on some deserted and rocky atolls for a rest, but the aerial corps did not risk even them on any regular mission to the colony, and Temeraire could never follow such a course without the utmost danger. And Granby and Esquirco would go as well, when Riley did, to avoid a similar entrapment, leaving Temeraire quite isolated from his own kind, save for the 3 prospective hatchlings who were as yet an unknown quality.
"Well, that is nothing to be sorry for," Temeraire said, rather darkly eyeing Esquirco,
who at present was asleep and exhaling quantities of steam from her spikes upon his flank, which gathered into fat droplets and rolled off to soak the deck beneath him.
"Not," he added, "that I would object to company. It would be pleasant to see Maximus again, and Lily, and I would like to know how Pisidia is getting on with her pavilion. But I am sure they will write to me when they are settled, and as for her, she may go away any time she likes."
Lawrence felt Temeraire might find it a heavier penalty than he yet knew. Yet the prospects of these miseries which had heretofore on their journey greatly occupied his concerns seemed petty in comparison to the disaster of the situation that now awaited them, trapped in the roles of convict and kingmaker both, and without any means of escape, save if they chose to sacrifice all intercourse with society and take themselves off into the wilderness.
"Pray do not worry, Lawrence," Temeraire said stoutly. "I am sure we will find it a very interesting place. And anyway," he added, "at least there will be something nicer to eat."